Life's Third Act is a podcast dedicated to helping you get the most out of your retirement. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Life's Third Act. This week, we're going to talk about somebody that I think you all know. Sometimes when we do this, Marley, I know we're going to be talking about somebody that everybody knows. Yes. Like Elvis was probably the single most huge, the biggest name we've done. This name, I think most of you will know, but he's a very, very talented person, very influential, and there's some opportunities to learn as we look at his life, we look at his estate planning, and kind of where things went wrong. And that's the theme of this series that we have been focusing on for the last several months and intend to continue to as a tool for learning. Granted, it's interesting. There's something voyeuristic in this, all these topics that appeals to us as human beings. But also, there's definitely opportunities for us to learn and to come to respect more some of these people as we learn more about their lives, even though they might have made often mistakes in estate planning. What I find probably almost as interesting as to focus on the estate planning side is to talk about these people's lives and the ways in which they were special, things I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. So Marley, do you want to introduce our subject this week?
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. He is a very well-known actor, and he made his break in the 90s with Capote, and he played Truman Capote in that film, and he actually won an Academy Award from that. But I mean, he's done films all the way up until his death. His last one was The Hunger Games. I know some people might be familiar with it, at least the name, but he was big in Moneyball and Twister and all of those movies.
And then he just appeared in a lot of movies.
Yes, yeah.
And many of you will remember Philip Seymour from Sin of a Woman, mm-hmm. where he played the spoiled kid, right? The kid who had all the connections. And those of you who've seen the movie, that'll trigger something maybe. But he really was a memorable character in everything that he did.
Yeah. Even if he just, like you said, even if he just appeared, I remember him in some things. And I'm like, really, he was in that? And then I'm like, yeah, he was. Because I remember seeing him as just like a small role. But he loved acting. He loved doing what he did.
Yeah, yeah. He had this gift for being able to shine in whatever the role was.
Mm-hmm.
Strong roots are essential for a healthy tree, especially your family tree. That's why you work hard to take care of your family every day. At Tucker Allen, we know that taking care of your family means planning for the future. Our team provides personalized estate planning to help you protect your family, your legacy, and your future. From wills and trusts to long-term care and estate planning, count on Tucker Allen, personalized estate planning made simple.
So he was 46 when he died?
46. It was in 2014, and he actually died from an overdose of heroin, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's kind of something that he had a problem with drugs mm-hmm. for early in his life especially. And he apparently was very wild and partied and took a lot of drugs all the way through college. Mm-hmm. I suspect it started in high school. He went to college at New York University, great school, went into film, theater major.
Yeah.
And apparently there he did a lot of partying. I'm sure that many of the drugs that became a problem at the end of his life, he probably used some then. But what's interesting is that he graduates New York University, and within like a year, I'm pretty sure it was less a year, certainly mm-hmm. less than a year and a half, he submits or goes into in-house treatment for this drug alcohol problem. I'm sure it's both. So this was something for somebody that young at age 22, he mm-hmm. went in for treatment. That indicates it was out of control, but it also reflects well the fact that he at the threshold of his future, mm-hmm. when many young people who had just graduated college would be thinking primarily about that next job, and particularly somebody who has drug and alcohol problems, they tend to push it aside. But he took the bull by the horns at that point in his life, and we don't know the backstory.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and I definitely think it had to do with obviously the industry he was in and the time frame that it was when he graduated college also. But I mean, I think it was really important because we saw a lot of actors whose lives ended early in the early 2000s due to heroin overdoses or drug overdoses. And, you know, I don't think he wanted that for himself. So I think, you know, he wanted to get clean. He wanted to be okay. And he was for a little while.
He was, and for a long while.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, in a way, what makes this even more sad, sort of, is that he goes in for treatment. Unlike the typical story we hear, you know, he doesn't slide backwards. Mm-hmm. He comes out, he builds this career we've just been talking about, becomes pretty successful fairly quickly. I'm sure he would say it didn't seem that quickly because really it was the latter part of the 90s before he was really getting to garner a lot of attention. But he goes in for treatment. He takes to it, which, you know, took a lot of discipline, took a lot of determination. So he comes out clean and stays clean until, according to all the reports that we've seen, 2012 or so.
Yeah, which was, I mean, right.
2 years before
his death. Yeah, right in the midst of him filming all the Hunger Games movies and everything like that.
You know, so he had persevered for so long and in the course of which he met. Tell us about this woman.
Yeah, so he met Marianne O'Donnell, and he had three kids with her, Tallulah, Willa, and Cooper. And when Philip died, they were 10, 7, and 5. So they were still pretty young when he died.
10, 7, and 5. Yeah, and so he never married her, though.
He didn't believe in marriage from all the sources that I read. He just didn't think that it would do anything for their relationship. They were, you know, they were happy. They were living together.
In New York, right?
Yeah, common law marriage. He didn't think they needed a title like that or anything.
Except an important point here is that while some states would have made that official, there's no common law recognition in the state of New York. Mm-hmm. So they weren't married under New York law. So in this case, he really loved his kids.
Yes.
So he was a family man by all accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he and Mimi had separated, what, less than a year before?
Yeah, not very long before. It was like 6 months to a year, not super long.
And supposedly the reason he moved out was, well, first of all, we can imagine that if he's using drugs, he's gone back. You know, the saying in drug treatment philosophy and experience is that if you quit something and you go back to using it later, whether it's 1 year or 10 years, is it's like a train going down the track. You get back on, so to speak, further down the track. In other words, your potential to decline much faster is apparently greater if you've been off for so long and you decide to go back. So it's not as if you go back and you have a toe in the water. Or if you do have a toe in the water, you immediately go over your head pretty quickly. And that was obviously what happened here.
Yeah.
So he had moved out because he didn't want to be around. He felt his being around the children was a problem in his condition.
Yeah, and I don't think it was easy for either of them. They really loved each other. I mean, he trusted her with the kids. He wanted absolutely what was best for the kids. And as we'll see, like even in his will for Cooper, he wrote in that if him and Mimi were to die, then he wanted somebody to raise his child in, you know, somewhere with culture, somewhere with art, so that he could become an actor or a filmmaker or something along those lines, because that's what Philip loved so much and wanted for his kids as well.
Yeah, I mean, he had all these good qualities. And what I found interesting when I read comments that he's made and read interviews, he was real big on hard work.
Yes.
He felt that, you know, you're in the world and you can, he said something in one interview to the effect that, look, we're here in the world. We can choose to spend it sitting on a couch, eating pizza, watching television, or we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go out and, you know, build something, do something. And he felt that he needed to always be doing something. And he worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that created some of the stress.
Yeah, think that it did. I mean, I think he was in between multiple projects whenever he passed away. The Hunger Games franchise is huge. If anybody knows anything about that, it's still massive. But I know they had a huge, huge role for him coming up in the third one that they were filming. Obviously, he didn't get to finish that out. But I think it was just a really stressful situation that he was in. And, you know, if you have younger kids and you're trying to do what's best for them in that time frame, it just can become a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had won an Academy Award for Capote, which and had been nominated other times for and had won other awards for various roles. He's really a tremendous actor. Those of you, I know some of you don't know who he is, but or you don't, you can't bring him to mind. But if you pull something from his what would you call it? Not discology.
Filmography.
That's it. Discography, I guess, is the Bob Dylan and others. So, if you look though at any of the movies that he's been in, just choose one, and I'm willing to bet that you'll say, "Oh yeah, I know that guy. Yeah, that guy was also," and then you'll think of other stuff. So he was just a tremendous worker.
Yeah,
tremendously devoted. And we'll talk a little bit now about the estate planning, I guess.
Yeah, so when it came to his estate planning, he just kind of did, you know, the bare minimum, I want to say. I mean, his will was about 13 pages long. There was a couple different reports that I read. One said that he set it up through his CPA. One said that he set it up through a lawyer that had actually been a real estate attorney. But
I don't know which of those two options is
better,
worse.
But he, like I said, he did the bare minimum. He wasn't married to Mimi. He didn't really think anything through when it came to the tax implications. And the biggest thing was that he didn't set up a trust because he didn't want his children to be trust fund kids, which, you know, that's why I really wanted to talk about this, because I think that's something that we talk about, but we haven't ever really harped on the importance of, you don't make trust fund kids by doing that, because you can set those rules. Even in his will, it set up that his son had to be raised a certain way. Well, you can make sure that's actually enforced in your trust. And so I think, you know, he missed the mark on that. And then he made his will in 2004, and that was the very last version of it, which only his son Cooper had been born at that time. He didn't take into consideration that he would have more kids, and he didn't change it when those kids came along.
Yeah, and he did have a provision that, though he didn't care for trust, he was willing to concede a trust if, in fact, Mimi had died by the time that Philip died. Mm-hmm. So in that case, there would be no biological parent alive. And he was willing to have a trust in effect for them. But that wasn't triggered because Mimi was alive.
Yeah, but would that make a difference if it was only Cooper that he had written that for? Would Tallulah and Willa
They wouldn't have had the benefit of a trust like that. While there are laws that would have kept them from being disinherited, though they weren't mentioned, the good news is afterborn children are going to be included. In virtually all states have rules that if you make a will, make provisions for a child. Often what they'll do, though, almost all those statutes say that whatever amount you're going to give to that one child, say it was one half of the estate and the other was going to go to the mom, then it's that one half that's divided among the afterborn children. Mm. So after you create the will, you had three kids, so now you're dividing this four ways, the same amount. These statutes, I don't know of any statute that says we take that amount for that one child, and in addition, we're going to take these other assets and bring them in. So it's never, whenever you go with something that is a default plan made by a legislature, it's probably not the thing that reflects perfectly your intentions. And I'm convinced when I read the comments by the CPAs as well as the attorneys after the attorney that initially drafted this, and I don't want to be too harsh. I mean, you can have a real estate lawyer who can prepare, you know, a will in many cases, depending on the complexity. It's like being in one area of the law and practicing in another area to do a particular thing. If it's not real complicated, that can be okay. But if it's something that is sophisticated, and quite frankly, this is, because he had earned a significant amount of money, his net worth was in the ballpark of what, $35 million?
Yeah, it was, the estate was around $35 million.
Yeah, so And who knows, the way we've talked, well, on this show, we've talked about how these numbers keep growing because of licensure and branding and intellectual property that's associated with fame and celebrity.
And I mean, yeah, that his last movie came out after his death. So who knows how much was made off of that and what could have been done with that. But I'm sure a portion of it went to taxes.
Oh, yeah, a good portion, I'm sure. Yeah. And there's still money coming in. And what's unfortunate about this, I think, is that Philip Seymour had this image in his head that, on the one hand, he wanted to influence how his kids were raised. He was really committed to their being exposed to the arts, and he wanted them to be in an urban area that was rich in culture. So he insisted that his kids, he stated that he wanted his kids to live in either New York, Chicago.
It was a suburb of Manhattan, Chicago, or San Francisco.
Or San Francisco. Yeah. I don't know about San Francisco.
But
anyway, so yeah, that was what he said. And what he was trying to communicate is that he wanted his children to be exposed to wonderful things and culturally, art, et cetera, dance, theater. But the mechanism for doing that was simply an expression of a preference. Mm-hmm. And that's called precatory language in a will. And precatory language is generally interpreted to be a wish. Many courts have said of a phrase of a phrasing in a particular document in estate planning that this is simply a wish, and that's what precatory is, or a preference, or a suggestion. Had somebody sit down and explain more fully, I think, to Philip Seymour that this could have been so much better, I think he probably would have been willing to listen to that.
Yeah, and I'm really surprised that, like, his real estate attorney or CPA, what have you, didn't say you need an estate planning attorney. It's so odd to me, because for people that go to somebody like that, I'm like, you wouldn't really want like a heart doctor doing your brain surgery, would you?
No.
Yeah.
And in fairness, he had, I'll say this though, in defense of this lawyer, is that to the extent that he did disclose that you should have a trust, and apparently he did suggest a trust, it was what was later testimony, and that he turned it down, and that was backed up by the CPA. So in that case, the real estate attorney probably would have turned it over to someone else to prepare that trust, I hope. You sometimes deal with trust, in fairness to real estate lawyers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they deal in trust, but not in the way that a true estate planner would, but more than, for example, a divorce lawyer would typically, although divorce lawyers deal with trust too, I can tell you. So in this case, I think on the one hand, his desire was that he wanted to positively influence his children. But on the other hand, he didn't want them to be what he called trust fund kids. Mm-hmm. And if somebody had said, look, you can reconcile those two concerns, because what you're calling trust fund kids is simply people who the terms of the trust were not handled correctly. In this case, there was so much waste, and there's such a question mark about the extent to which these children, which no one questions, he loved so much, and Mimi, the extent to which he failed them by not being more thoughtful or not seeking people who could better explain. I'll start with the consequences of these decisions for Mimi. Mimi was not his spouse. An estate planning lawyer would have mentioned that perhaps even though you don't care about marriage or you don't think it's important, you should marry for other reasons. And had they been married, she would have gotten an exemption for estate tax planning purposes. There would have been a number of tax benefits available to them that weren't available under these circumstances. So the 12 to 14 or 15 million.
15 million, almost like half of that of the estate.
Between state and federal taxes. So all this money that went to the federal and state government, state of New York, probably all of it could have been avoided. Mm-hmm. Probably there could have been, that could have been, I'm sure, that could have been handled where there had been no taxes. And furthermore, Mimi would have been in a better position, not only because there was less money taken in taxes, but because she could have gotten that money in a safe of sorts, where she would have access all meaningful access that she wanted, and still that money would be immune from her creditors, from lawsuits, from a divorce. I mean, she's relatively young. I assume she'll remarry if she hasn't already, or will marry if she hasn't already. And suddenly, this money that was her separate property could very well end up in the hands of some guy that I suspect Philip and even she will no longer like.
Yes.
and this was all preventable. Mimi would have been in a much better position herself, not to mention it behooves, you know, parents, whenever they have younger children, to recognize the probability that a surviving parent will likely remarry and may have kids, may adopt, may grow to love other kids, may make bad decisions. And for parents to not plan for what they've accumulated together to be assured to go either to the surviving spouse, of course, but some set aside for the children, because that way you know. So the surviving spouse is entitled to and will go on and have, you know, a full life, which may include another family. You know, life goes on. And that money gets, you know, gets commingled. It gets commingled with other funds to such an extent that it's virtually unrecognizable what was the money that was her separate money. And put more boldly or more disturbingly, money that was the children's money that became commingled and is gone, or at least a good portion, probably half, is gone to a stranger from a legal standpoint. So this could have been headed off, and it would have been happy for everybody. Now let me go to the kids. So we still have the fact that much of this estate now is gone in taxes. Not, I mean, still, you have a big estate, and it's going to grow for the reasons we mentioned. Now it's going to grow under circumstances that, you know, are very vulnerable. We don't know if the kids are going to see a nickel of it. Remember, this money was not left to the kids. You know, the money was left to Mimi.
Mm-hmm.
So we know she loves the kids, and I'm not questioning her whether she'll use it. And I think that's what Philip was thinking. Mm-hmm. I think Philip Seymour was thinking, and you may be thinking, well, gee, my wife, if you're a husband, or my husband, if you're a wife, cares for these kids, and they're going to always take care of them. The question is not really that the surviving parent is going to decide to be cruel and neglect the kids. It's that they're vulnerable to so many things, some of which I've already mentioned, but other things, lawsuits, a car accident, just bad judgment, just bad judgment. I mean, making an investment, being the victim of a financial planner, which preys on, I don't want to be sexist, so men or women can prey on men or women. Whichever one is not sophisticated financially, if that's the one that survives, then there's going to be a bunch of people who will come in to want to take care of their money, and often money just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So it's frustrating when you read stories like this and you think these kids could have been so much better provided for. Let me describe a little more what I think the trust would look like and why it need not be a quote-unquote trust fund kids scenario. You get to write the rules if you create a trust. And all that means is you get to say the conditions under which your children will receive the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not inappropriate to have conditions in which you say to the trustee, you want money set aside so that they can go to these cities periodically or live in these cities if the mother, Mimi, well, she would be the lawful guardian, the parent. And so she's going to decide where the kids live, not the trust. But the trust can fund trips to those cities. It can assure in a way that all we have from Philip now is a wish.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Philip could have been confident that there would be the funds for them, for the children to be able to fulfill those cultural, artistic, aesthetic ambitions that he had for them. He could have been confident about that because he could have funded it through the trust. And he could have been confident that the money would be there for the children for the balance of their lives. In whatever way he wanted, sounds like he would want to be pretty strict.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. That's why I thought it was so odd, because it sounded like he wanted rules to his money. So why not just make rules for your money for your kids?
Yeah.
So
I think no one explained to him that that, look, Philip, can you imagine any scenario where you'd want some resources to be available to your kids?
Yeah.
Say for emergencies. Say to buy their first house.
Yes.
Say to put their child through college. Can you imagine anything, Philip, that you'd want to be available for your children mm-hmm. in terms of financial relief?
And I mean, he wanted them to live in those bigger cities. He could have just said, like, you know, you get this amount of rent per month from your trust, go live here, and just set up those rules for that. I know, like, some of my friends, they have trust and that's how theirs is set up. And I think that's great for them because it's making sure that their parents, like, set up a good future with them, but it's not yeah. too pushy, but there's still rules to it.
Yeah, it's a carrot, not a stick.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's a better way for trust to work. It's not a stick, but to say, look, if you live in these cities, mm-hmm. we can help subsidize that. And so there's so many things you can do. And the idea that you just create spoiled, debauched kids when you have a trust is a poor understanding. And I hold the attorneys, maybe unfairly, but I hold them a little bit responsible in my suspicion, which is all it is, that this point wasn't made with sufficient emphasis. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody should have been emphatically saying to him, this is what needs to be done.
Yes.
He probably, in fairness, I'm sure he didn't think he would die at 46.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody does. And I think he yeah. thought he'd be around to, you know, not tell his kids what they can do with his money, but to help his kids build those lives that he wants for them.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, when we think about opportunities to learn, I think one theme that we see here is that sometimes great figures in the business world or in the artistic world, they will do something responsible relating to estate planning like Elvis did. Mm-hmm. Elvis is a good example. No doubt he loved his daughter. But he thought, okay, I've checked this box. Mm-hmm. I have a will, and it's very simple. And watch that show if you want to learn more about that. So it's almost as if, look, if you're somebody who has sufficient assets and you want to be responsible, as all these people that we've talked about, at least in today's conversation, you know, these are the people who want to do it right. But if you're going to do that, go all the way and do it right. Mm-hmm. And I think the mistake is they think, well, I can step beyond the threshold. And if I've arrived at the threshold, you know, I create a document. It's called a will. Done. I've been a responsible parent. And I think that's the mistake is having too low a bar. It's kind of like if you're going to go to the trouble to do it, go to the trouble to think about it and don't plan on what would have probably was an hour discussion, mm-hmm. perhaps at this time. I doubt it was many hours because I'm convinced something different would have emerged. So it was probably an hour or maybe a little more in which, you know, this decision was handled. Instead, take several hours, take the time it takes to know what the best deal is. And it's so much little additional effort. Once you've gone to the trouble of talking through the terms of a trust, as he did, he'd had a trust for Cooper,
yeah.
which didn't turn out being valid because, again, Mimi didn't predecease Cooper. Had she, there would have been a trust for at least him. So in this case, these kids may never see a nickel of this money.
Mm.
I mean, there's nothing left to them, just to make that clear. And I just think that's a bad idea, not because we think Mimi may deliberately do any financial harm to the kids. I just think that it's a wild world out there.
Yeah. And I mean, you can have falling out with your parents. You can, things can happen. Like you said, they can get married, divorced. You can get married, divorced, anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And people fall under the influence of spouses that mm-hmm. come along. And as your example, where maybe, you know, there's an argument. It might not have been that Philip would have agreed with Mimi, who's had this run-in with the girlfriend of Cooper, for example. Let's mm-hmm. assume Cooper's 25 and he has a relationship with a woman that is very rude or mean to Mimi. And Mimi says, look, enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not because she's a bad parent, but because she thinks, look, if this is what you're going to do, it's disrespectful to me. Well, maybe Philip wouldn't have agreed with that. So once you decide that I'm just going to leave it all to my wife, and worst of all, without being in a trust. So many mistakes here. I hope these kids come to receive and enjoy benefits from this money and their children.
Mm-hmm.
There should be enough money here to benefit their children.
Yeah, and I mean, from what I've seen, they have kept up with the lifestyle for the most part, but their early well, no, they're like late teens right now. So, I mean, who knows? Those fun early adult years are coming for them. So that's when all the big things start happening, and that's when fallouts start happening and everything.
Yeah, it's hard to predict the future. And one thing, it might be worth mentioning, it's a little bit depressing, but the very end of Philip's life, he had deteriorated so far so fast that in the short time we had talked about, he had gotten to the point where he was found after his death. He was living with a friend. He was found still with a hypodermic needle in his arm and lots of bags of heroin. So, and there was evidence of a lot of drugs around the apartment. They don't think it was suicide. I've never heard anybody suggest that. But, I mean, he fell fast when he... Remember, he had been clean for up till 12. Yeah. From like 90 to 2012. And it goes to show you, you know, when you get sober like that, you really need to work on that sobriety. Because when you take it for granted, those are the stories you hear where people fall off the wagon and can fall far and fast.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is the story of Philip Seymour. Lots of opportunities to learn here. Some recurring themes, you can expect that. So this has been another episode of Life's Third Act. Let me mention again that we really like the fact that we've had several of you now have subscribed. We love that. It's the best message to us that you think, oh, this is important enough to where I want to see this again. Mm-hmm. I want to see the next episode. So that really tells us that we're providing material that's useful to you or enjoyable. So please, if you've not subscribed, subscribe in the like button. That's important. And interact with us. That really helps us. Plus, we're interested in getting your thoughts. Some stuff I know we say on here you're going to disagree with. You're going to have ideas about how we can do this better. We're very interested in those ideas. And yes, we are subject to correction. It happens not infrequently. So we look forward to your joining us for future shows. This has been another episode of Life's Third Act. Till next time, take care.
You've been listening to Life's Third Act, a podcast for thriving in retirement. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. Each week, we discuss topics and answer questions to help you better plan for your future. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. Subscribe and listen again next week for another edition of Life's Third Act. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.